Don't mind us, we're playing through. Here's Froggy and Wacker.
Welcome to the Playing Through Podcast. It is Froggy from Elvis Duran of the Morning Show. With my boy Brian Wacker live on location. He is at, or shall I say he's on his way to the Travelers. He had to stop and pick up some fuel. We call it Dunkin' Donuts, but I call it fuel for Brian because he is a real coffee. He's kind of a coffee snob and coffee connoisseur.
You know, I just have a question, right?
Yeah.
So we just talked about this before the podcast. So I got, you know, Dunkin' Donuts is great, by the way. It started in New England. I'm up in New England for the Travelers Championship. And they gave me, on the receipt, there's a survey you can fill out to get a free bakery item.
Right.
Any Froggy, do you ever fill out a receipt or fill out a survey to get a free bakery item or anything?
No, I've never filled out anything.
I don't want to know who does that.
I don't think anybody does, but I'll tell you something else I don't do, but I'm glad other people do, is when I see reviews online, like whether it's an Amazon review or a Yelp review, I'll read them and make my decision on whether I want to purchase an item or go visit that place. However, I've never written a review in my life, which is kind of selfish if you think about it.
Well, no, not really, because that's for everybody else to write the reviews.
Yeah, but how do you know who's writing that review? It could be some guy they pay, the guy that works there, the guy that owns the place.
Right.
Like, I never know who's writing it.
That's why I never – see, here's how I approach reviews. I never, like, take the glowing five-star review, and I never take the worst review. I tend to sort of gravitate toward the middle
right.
and see what the most sensible of the reviews are and how many good reviews are, how many bad, how many in the middle. But surveys – I'm going to forget about that receipt in about 30 seconds.
Right.
I think I'm going to remember to go online when I get home. Like, I just pulled into the drive-thru. They gave me the receipt. I mean, I'm not going to remember when I go back to Dunkin' Donuts tomorrow.
No.
That if I had filled out the survey, I could get a free bakery item. No,
right.
I'm going to pay my money and, like an idiot. I'm going to spend more money.
Right.
When I get a free bakery item. From the survey, anyway.
Exactly.
Let's talk about golf. Enough about golf.
Speaking of reviews, let's review the amazing tournament that was the U.S. Open. I know you were there. You were at
Pebble Beach.
It looked absolutely beautiful.
Torrey Pines, Pebble Beach.
If you drank every time that the Fox crew mentioned the marine layer at Pebble Beach, you would have been drunk.
I would be dead.
You would have been dead on Wednesday afternoon.
We would not be doing this podcast because I would be diseased.
So,
I would have died from alcohol poisoning.
How gorgeous was Pebble? How beautiful was the U.S. Open? And, I mean, just tell us. I mean, I have so many questions, but I'm going to let you answer some without me asking you everything under the sun.
Look, the marine layer, even with that marine layer hanging around all week and temperatures in the 50s, that place was beautiful. It's one of the most incredible places in the entire planet. Look, we all know that. It's been photographed a million times. It's been we all saw the shots from Fox. How about that, by the way? The drone images, the drone footage that Fox provided, just some gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous shots of that property that we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. And
that's something else I want to get into. I want to get into my review of how well I think the Fox crew did this week as a whole and how far they've come from where they started just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, because you watched a lot more of it from the TV perspective than
yes.
I was able to. I
hadn't. Yes.
Trudge around the golf course, and you know, I only saw bits and pieces of the television coverage throughout the week, whereas you would have seen a lot more. So I'm curious to hear, well, let's start with that, what you thought of Fox's broadcast of it, their presentation, some of the new technology with the drone shots that we saw, some of the tracer technology that we saw. What was your perspective as a fan watching at home?
There were things I loved and things I did not love. One thing I did not love the bringing in of Jim Nantz. I just didn't think it was needed.
Really?
I did not love that.
Really?
I did not love the bringing in of Jim Nantz. But what I did love...
Little schmaltzy for you?
It's just too much. I'm like, you know what? Jim's great over on CBS. He does a great job at the Masters. I just didn't need him there. I did love Johnny Miller on the Golf Channel, but once again, that's not Fox. But speaking of just the Fox presentation, let's go back to when Fox first took on the USGA contract, and they got all the USGA tournaments. And it was, we started off, we had Greg Norman, they had Holly Saunders on, and they were really trying really hard to be different. Always had Joe Buck. I didn't love it then. I thought they were doing a poor job.
No.
I do miss.
Wasn't very good.
Well, I miss Holly Saunders, and I think maybe there's a personal deal there, just because she's a very good friend of the program. I love Holly. Sure. She's great. She's fun to look at. I do miss Holly, but I want to say, Joe Buck and Paul Azinger did a phenomenal job all 4 days. The drone footage was something, like you said, we've never seen before. And with now Johnny Miller being out of the booth over at NBC, I could make an argument that the Fox crew and Fox's presentation of the U.S. Open was the best in the business.
Well, it's, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, Augusta and the Masters, CBS, is a pretty tough combination for a lot of reasons, and a lot of that has to do with Augusta National
right.
driving that bus and having control over a lot more things than most majors or most tournaments or most networks would. So to your point, though, certainly we have seen dramatic improvement, I think, from Fox compared to 2015. And, you know, I actually, Azinger, I think, has been terrific. But I would like to see a little more. I feel like he's holding back a bit. So I'd like to see a little more critiques from Paul. He's a great, great voice in the game. And I think he's being careful to sort of just being careful in his approach. And, you know, maybe over time that'll change and it'll get a little looser. But, yeah, overall, I thought the presentation is dramatically improved. And, look, we have to remember, Fox does this once a year, right? And the same crew that did the U.S. Open was not the same crew that did the U.S. Women's Open. So right. It's not as if they had a quote-unquote run-up to it.
Yeah, dry run.
Right. And I don't even want to call it dry run, because the U.S. Open, Women's Open is a big deal. But,
right.
You know, they do it once a year. So it's really hard to get all this in sync one time a year, 1 week a year. So, you know, the Super Bowl is a big deal. But you're generally talking about crews that, even though that's a once-a-year event,
they've done 16 weeks of working on football games. Yeah.
Right. Right. So that said, yeah, dramatic improvement. Love the drone stuff. I think technologically, this is where Fox has always sort of separated itself. Technologically, I think they're doing a great job, and it will continue to get better.
Yeah, I mean, I even loved some of the tee shots where you would see them hit tee shots that were blind, trying to cut corners, and the shot tracer or shot tracker, whatever you want to call it, was always very accurate. Like, I know CBS had tried to do some stuff earlier in the year, and it was way off.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of the technology they used really, really worked. And the way they showed the golf course was very, very cool in ways that I had not seen Pebble Beach before. And so I think Fox did a great job. But the tournament lived up to the hype, even without, you know, Tiger Woods. Like, all week long, we were very much kind of given the whole what if Tiger aspect and what if Phil wins and completes the career Grand Slam. And Rory had played so well at the RBC the week leading in. They gave us Rory all week. And then, of course, obviously, and rightfully so, they gave us the Brooks line. But never did we think about – I mean, there was no talk about Gary Woodland coming in and doing what he did. But Brooks played very, very well, was there at the end with something to say. I thought Justin Rose played very well. Justin Rose, for somebody who was not, quote, his ball striking was off. For him to even be there with a chance on Sunday was remarkable. And then, of course, Brooks and Gary Woodland. I thought the golf lived up to the hype without the stars that we thought we were probably going to see going into the week.
No, look, you know, it's I mean, it's, the leaderboard was pretty star-packed as it was. It didn't have Tiger or Phil, certainly, but Rory was in the mix much of the week. You mentioned Justin Rose, of course. Dustin Johnson never really got going, but we had Brooks Koepka, and, of course, that incredible start on Sunday. I mean, at that moment, when he gets off to that start, four birdies in the first five holes, and it looks like he may catch Gary Woodland, you thought, here you go. And to me, Brooks, and I wrote this for Golf Digest, Brooks Koepka, to me, is the closest thing we've seen to Tiger since Tiger. Now, don't confuse that with me comparing him to Tiger.
Right.
Because that's just foolish. The point is, this thing we've seen to him, and from that, I mean, from a physical, athletic standpoint, the things he's able to do with the golf ball and his golf swing, but also mentally, this is a guy who is proving time and time and time again, he is showing up in the big tournaments.
Right.
Pretty much every single time. I mean, his major record is remarkable. His last four majors, he's gone first, second, first, second.
Right.
I mean, and before that, before he even won his first major, he had a handful of top five and top ten finishes. So this, now, look, he doesn't do it on a week-to-week basis. I don't know if it's just boredom.
Well, he says he doesn't care. I mean, he's been asked that. He said that. He thinks the majors are easier to win than a regular tour event.
And he's right. He's 100% right. Because I always look at it. Look, when you look at a major, you know, you can cross a certain number of those players off the list immediately. Immediately, because you take the PGA, right? Well, there's a bunch of club pros in the PGA. Those guys aren't going to contend. Then there's guys who maybe slide in to qualify at the last minute. Those guys generally don't contend. Then you're going to have a segment of players who just don't play well. Those guys aren't going to contend.
Right.
So automatically, right off the bat, you're eliminating a good portion of the field. Whereas a PGA Tour event, you know, you're talking about a deep field every week in and week out, and you never know who's going to win.
Right.
Those courses are set up the same way. They're set up easier. And there's a consistency level week to week on tour that you don't have in a major, where a major is difficult. And again, all the things with the field that we just talked about, to me, it makes perfect sense.
And, yeah, well, he wants it set up rough. Like, he's
better than everybody else.
He says that the tough setup rules out a lot of people,
right,
but keeps him in it. Like,
exactly.
He feels like the tougher setup is better for him, because it's going to weed out the low-end players, where the easier setup lets everybody have a chance. And it sounds crazy, and it sounds pompous, and it sounds like he's kind of being a dick. But it's real. When you really look at it, it kind of all makes sense.
No, it totally does, because look at Tiger Woods' career, another comparison. You know, he would win on, you know, the harder the golf course, generally speaking, the better his chances were, because he's better than everybody else. When you are better than everyone else and you make the golf course that much more difficult, well, then it's going to eliminate the people who are not as good as you.
Right.
So I'm not surprised he said it. I don't, you know, and he's got to have more confidence than anybody in golf right now. And quite frankly, he's the best player in golf, and it's not close.
Yeah, now, the British Open has not been his strong point. And so I know that's been his lowest finish recently at a major. I know he didn't play the Masters when he was injured. But other than that, he's been like top five in winning every single major except for the British Open. Last year's British Open, I think he finished somewhere in the 20s or the 30s. So do we like Brooks's chances at Royal Portrush as we go and start looking towards? I know this week we've got the Travelers and you're there, and I know there's some other tournaments in between. But for some reason, when it comes to Brooks Koepka talk, it is all about the majors. Like you said, the closest thing we've seen to Tiger since Tiger, somebody who has always based his year around trying to peak at the right time for the majors. Do we like Brooks at Royal Port Rush? Does it play into his game? Is there a place that doesn't play into his game if he's on?
I don't think there is a place that doesn't play into his game. He's won on a variety of golf courses. When you look at everything from his regular victories that he's had to his major championships. So to me, this is a guy who is built for winning majors. So, yeah, absolutely we should consider him a favorite going into Royal Port Rush, because here's the thing. No one's really ever played that golf course. I mean, there are some guys who have. Rory McIlroy set the course record there as a junior when he was 16, shot a 61. But they've redone some of the golf course. They've redone the last couple of holes. They've redone a couple of other places on the property. So now an Open Championship, it's a different animal. A lot of it's driven by weather. A lot of it's driven by which end of the draw you end up on. The conditions. Look, we saw last year at Carnoustie when it was fast and firm and bouncy, and there's really nowhere that you could get in too much trouble, didn't need to hit a lot of driver, and we saw Tiger Woods in contention. So I don't know what we're going to get in Port Rush in about 3 or 4 weeks from now. So, but he is every single time. After this week's U.S. Open, he immediately opened as the favorite to win the British Open.
It's unbelievable. Immediately. Unbelievable.
So he's the favorite every time. If he's not the favorite, he's a favorite every single time he tees it up in a major championship.
Now, we would be remiss not to talk more about Gary Woodland and what an amazing performance Gary put on. I know that Ricky was leading on day one.
14. You know,
and then yep. Gary makes the run on Friday afternoon, gets the lead. Saturday holds the lead. Sunday, Brooks comes out of the gate, and boom, he was three or four behind to start the day. Then the next thing you know, he's within one. And Gary's got he's basically matching him shot for shot, a group behind him. But to me, and I know that you made a very good point when we had talked prior to the podcast, I thought the two shots that won the golf tournament for Gary was the three 14. Wood on 14 that he said his caddy talked him into, which his caddy, by the way, had won a major prior with Mike Weir many years ago, so it's probably very good to have that stability on the bag. And I thought the wedge off the green on 17 was pretty amazing. I know you say that's a much more routine shot for them where it wouldn't be for us, but that three wood he hit on 14 might be the best three wood Gary Woodland has ever hit in his life.
I mean, that was just a macho shot. I mean, He, you know, and there was really no other option. I talked to his caddy about that yesterday, and there's really no play there for him because, you know, it was either 3-iron or 3-wood, and a 3-iron is a no-go in that spot because you couldn't bounce it into the green. And then the 3-wood, as long as you went, even if you went a little long and left, which is what Gary did, that's fine. It's not you couldn't miss right, but as long as you didn't as long as you didn't go right, you were fine. So laying up really wasn't an option because had he done that, he would have been faced with 80 or 90 yards uphill to a green he couldn't really see, hitting a wedge that probably would, you know, very easily could have spun back off the green.
Yeah, and that green had given people fits all week. If you remember Rory and Tiger both on Friday, it rolled all the way back to their feet and had a really hard time getting up and down.
Rory made a mess of the hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rory made a 7 on the hole. So, you know, that derailed Rory's chances almost immediately on Friday. So you want to be in that spot. So an unbelievable 3-wood, gets over that bunker by a couple of feet, trickles off the back, incredible shot. Yeah, then the one on 17, the little wedge, the little Phil Mickelson wedge from on the putting green. What a great shot and a cool backstory because he used to practice those when he worked with Rick Smith. That's how he improved his chipping, was by chipping off a putting green. I mean, if you want to improve your chipping, go chip off a putting green or a tight surface, and eventually you're going to get better at chipping.
Right.
And then sure enough, that moment played out. And Gary actually had that same shot on Friday as well. Not a lot of people remember that, but he was faced with a similar shot on Friday and did the same thing, and it worked. So kudos to Gary. That was an incredible performance. Never blinked. You know, I wrote this for Golf Digest. He's sort of like a Costco version of Brooks Koepka, in my opinion. Like, sort of a friendlier, lighter version of Brooks. You know, these guys are both jocks who played other sports growing up and were really good at those sports. They sort of carry themselves with a swagger and a machismo about them. And they both play similar games. I mean, they both hit it a mile. And when they started to really get gains in their results is when their short games improved. And that's exactly how Brooks Koepka had success with his wedge play and his short game. That's why one of the reasons he's been able to have the success he's had. Now, Gary Woodland, who's had a couple top tens in recent majors coming into this one. Remember, he set the 36-hole scoring mark at the PGA last year before Brooks broke that record this year at the PGA. And, you know, he's sort of just a lighter version of Brooks Koepka. So I don't know if this means Gary's going to win more majors, but that performance was really top-notch.
Yeah, there's two stats I definitely wanted to go over. I had written down while watching the tournament. One of them was he was 0-for-7 on 54-hole leads. None of that mattered come Sunday. He's now 1-of-8, and that 1-of-8 is a major that he was able to close out. Also, this year, going into that week, he was 160-something in scrambling. 160th. Around the greens, had not done very well, had really not been able to hold his own. But this week, he was first, which just goes to show you when it's your week and it's your time, what he was able to do at Pebble Beach really is something unbelievable. Now, real quick before we move on to Tiger and some other things, I want to ask you, did the USGA... do you like this setup, or did they go a little too easy because of where we had been in the past and they didn't want the golf course to be a story, and to their credit, it was not? Did they go a little too far and make it a little too easy, or were these guys just playing really, really well? You were there, you would know.
Well, let me put it this way. You ever watch an NBA game?
Yes.
Yeah, and notice when, let's say, LeBron James drives to the basket, misses a shot, complains about getting fouled, doesn't get the call, and then next time down the floor, drives to the basket, same thing happens, maybe even less happens, and they blow the whistle.
Yes, we call that an overcorrection. Right? Yes,
right, a makeup call.
Right.
This was absolutely a makeup call. The USGA was going to do whatever it could to avoid any shred of controversy. Now, that said, they were aided by the fact that the oft-talked-about marine layer hung around. The conditions were cool and moist, and you really couldn't get the golf course to the edge because the conditions didn't really allow that.
But do you have a problem with the quote makeup call?
No, neither do I. No, because look, I certainly would have liked to seen a little tougher setup. I would have liked to seen some more difficult pin placements, maybe some firmer conditions. But I also don't want to see what we had last year at Shinnecock either. So it's a really fine line to try to nail it. And there was zero chance that the USGA was going to go anywhere near going over that line this year.
Right.
They took a ton of heat. You could read our preview issue in Golf Digest, which I think we talked about on the previous podcast. The USGA Confidential with anonymous quotes about all of the shortcomings and problems with that tournament and with the organization through the years. So this was clearly a step to try to mend the fences with the players, to try try to have an event free of controversy, and that's what they had. And
right.
Look, it didn't quite feel like a U.S. Open, honestly, because it wasn't that difficult from the standpoint of, I think you had 30 plus guys finish under par for the week compared to the last time there at Pebble Beach, but it was really fun to watch. It was really good golf.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it.
It's hard to criticize. Yeah.
I didn't think it was too easy. I still enjoyed watching it, and I don't have a problem with the makeup call, because you said, I feel like the quality of golf and the fairness of the golf course was much better than what we got last year at Shinnecock.
Yes. And in the end, that's what matters. Look, certainly, again, would have liked to have seen it play more difficult. Not that it played easy, but it just didn't quite feel like a U.S. Open to me. Some of the rough wasn't as thick or heavy as you would have expected out of U.S. Open. The fairways were a little wider than you would have expected, but that's what we got. It was entertaining to watch. We got a great finish. We had a great leaderboard, really, on Sunday. So, you can't really ask for a whole lot more than that. So, if I was scoring it on a 1 to 10, maybe I'd give it like a 7.
Right.
That's certainly better than what we had last year.
Oh, for sure, 100%. Now, you were there. Tiger never really figured into the mix at all, kind of hung around on Thursday. Yeah. His putter kept him in his game. Friday, he couldn't make anything. Saturday, and then Sunday started off really terrible and then made a run there at the end to get a respectable finish of 21st, I believe, was his final finish. What do you make of Tiger's week at Pebble? Was it Tiger just wasn't prepared? Was it the golf course? What exactly do you make of the 21st place finish?
Well, I think he clearly didn't play well. Didn't putt well at times. At times his ball striking was off. And this is really what we've seen. Look, if you go back to the beginning of his comeback, most weeks or a lot of weeks, he's something is off. And Augusta, it wasn't off. And consequently, he won the golf tournament. So, to me, it says that he needs to be able to win with his A game, or he needs his A game rather to win. And he's not really going to win with a B game or certainly not a C game. I also think, I wonder what the conditions, the cooler weather.
He brought that up. He said that it bothered his back. Yeah, so was it abnormally cool? It looked like it was in the 50s most of the time.
Well, that's cold, Froggy. He lives in Florida.
Right, I know. So that's what I'm saying. So those conditions definitely were a lot of the reason where his back was never really able to free up and he had a lot of stiffness.
I don't think you can go back to Torrey Pines a couple of years ago when he withdrew because, all of a sudden it got cold and his back got tired and there's a long weather delay and things like that. So, at 43 and with all these surgeries and injuries, the cold weather is going to have an effect on occasion. And look, was that the only reason? No, certainly not. But, I think it's a factor. I think when the weather, when you get conditions like that, it's a factor. So,
right.
I just think this is the new, this is what Tiger is. He needs everything to click in order to win or be in contention. And we set those, that just doesn't happen every week for him anymore.
What do you make of the time off that he now will be taking time off? Because as you know, we took time off after the Masters. We did not see him play again until the PGA, and he showed up very unprepared. We did see him at Jack's tournament, and then we saw him here, and we all had kind of higher expectations. And then now I know he's on vacation in Thailand, and he made it pretty clear that we won't see him again until Royal Port Rush. What should we expect at Royal Port Rush? Should we expect another PGA performance, or is this a case where he'll prepare and maybe we'll get something closer to what we saw at Augusta, or will we get another Pebble performance? Where do we stand?
I think coming off the win at the Masters, there was such an emotional high that he was coming down from that you know, he clearly just didn't look prepared, as you say, for the PGA. I think it'll be different. He seemed prepared this week, just didn't play very well. I do think Lynx Golf, Port Rush, again, it should suit his game. Can't really get in a lot of trouble. He might be able to get away with not hitting drivers often. So I would expect something closer to, I don't want to say Augusta, because, again, he's going to need everything to click in order to be in contention. So, and that just doesn't happen as often at 43 as it does at 23. So, that said, I don't think he'll miss the cut. I think he'll play well, maybe be in contention, but certainly wouldn't be shocked if he's in the top 10, 15, 20 on the leaderboard at the end of the week.
Right. Well, you know, it really was a good tournament. I was hoping that Tiger and Phil would have a better showing. I would have liked to have seen one of them pull off. I had an argument with somebody. What was a bigger story? Whether it was Phil completing the career Grand Slam, Tiger winning again, or Rory winning. And all of those would have been great. But the truth is, we got a great week out of the U.S. Open. With none of those things happening, the only one that we really kind of expected was Brooks still showed up once again and dominated on a golf course again, and showed us that he will be there at every single major championship. So this week we move on to the Travelers. You got a really good feel there this week, correct?
It's amazing. You've got Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, a number of good players. They managed to do it every year somehow. And they're, they flew, they had a charter, bring guys on Monday morning from Pebble Beach, right down the street at Monterey Peninsula Airport, flew people here. It's a fun golf course to play. It's a much easier golf course than a U.S. Open, so it's always a nice reprieve. But year in, year out, the Travelers people seem to somehow get a great field, even off a West Coast Open, which you don't often see that. But they do a terrific job running the event, and it should be a really fun week and a lot of big names in the field, as you mentioned.
Well, you know what? I hope you have a great tournament. I would be remiss, too, as we've mentioned, Phil. Have you checked out the new – Phil seems to give us something new on social media every single week. Have you checked out Fireside Chats with Phil yet, Brian?
I have. That's a great, great story he told. I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't heard it, but it's a great story. It's worth checking out. Phil has crossed into some interesting territory these days, but he's – look, he's always entertaining, so I give him that much, and people should definitely go check it out. I'm sure most of our listeners have already seen it, but if they haven't, go check it out on Phil Mickelson's Instagram. It is hysterical.
So, speaking of Instagram, we gave away a bag, a U.S. Open bag, on our Instagram. TaylorMade was so gracious in providing us one of the bags that you saw. Rory was carrying one of the bags. Dustin Johnson, many of the TaylorMade guys, Ches Reavie, carrying the TaylorMade bags. And so I want to announce that the winner of last week's U.S. Open TaylorMade bag from the Playing Through podcast is Connor O'Neill. Connor O'Neill will get a bag. I've already gotten his address, and I'm going to ship the bag to him from TaylorMade. So once again, TaylorMade's providing us these bags for each and every single major championship this year. So if you want to register for the next one, we'll be doing it again. Come Royal Port Rush and the Open Championship. Our Instagram handle is @PlayingThroughPodcast. Really simple, @PlayingThroughPodcast. Go on there and follow us, and we will be giving away more cool stuff. So very, very cool bag for Connor. I'm sure he'll be showing it off on Instagram.
That's awesome. And TaylorMade does a great job. All their products, of course, great friends of the program, make incredible equipment, terrific looking bag. I had a chance to take a look at it last week out at Pebble Beach. And I'm excited to see what they've got cooking for Royal Port Rush, the first Open in Northern Ireland in more than 50 years, and almost 60 years, and that's going to be an awesome event. The crowd's going to be awesome. I'm sure some of the stuff that they will, that TaylorMade will have for that special week will be incredible. Rory, of course, being from not too far away, grew up about an hour south of there. So I'm sure he will have special gear from TaylorMade. So looking forward to checking out that next bag. And yeah, as Froggy mentioned, check it out, Play Through Golf, on Instagram and of course on Twitter. And that's, that'll do it. Yeah.
So make sure you check out Brian's latest article in Golf Digest also as well. He, kind of chronicled a guy who made the cut, finished at the U.S. Open, got on an airplane, traveled overnight, drove to TPC River Highlands, and then Monday qualified to play in this tournament this weekend. I read your article in Golf Digest there. That is a very good read if you want to read about how difficult it is. You know, it's not all – not everybody's Brooks Koepka and Gary Woodland and winning and just getting into the next event. It's just smooth sailing. You realize there's a lot going on the tour. And I enjoyed reading that piece that you've got in Golf Digest.
Yeah, that was a wild story. Taking a red eye from San Francisco, landing in Boston at 5 a.m., hopping in a car, driving 2 hours to Ellington Ridge for the Monday qualifier. And folks unfamiliar with a Monday qualifier, I mean, you generally got to shoot something in the low 60s, low to mid 60s to have a prayer. And you're generally going up against a field of about 100 guys, sometimes more, maybe less. But it's a big field. It's lightning in a bottle. And to do it off a red eye, off a couple hours of sleep and some McDonald's for breakfast, and then go out birdie first hole, then survive a 9-for-3 playoff to earn one of the four spots. It was a cool story. So, yeah, you can check that out on golfdigest.com. We'll, of course, have coverage of the Travelers Championship and a whole bunch of other stories all week long. Again, golfdigest.com, golfworld.com. Check it out. And yeah, that's a wrap.
All right, Brian, we will talk to you next week at Fresh Off the Travelers. I know you'll be headed back to beautiful, sunny South Florida. And we will talk to you then. Have a great tournament. Thanks so much for your time. And thanks for listening to the Playing Through Podcast.
I think you've had enough.
Playing Through.
No? Now you've had enough.
With Froggy and Wacker.
Bitch.